Good morning, members of the city, Deputy Minister, DG, officials of the department. It's 9 o'clock now. If we can just allow for maybe another 5 minutes, there are some members still joining us. Chairperson is also busy joining us. If we can just give it a minute or two, thank you. Morning, Chairperson. It's Llewellyn. Chairperson, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Chairperson, we currently have 8 members present in the meeting. We do constitute the quorum. If you want to start, we can. If you want to give it another minute or two for members to join us, we can do that, Chairperson.
Can you just help us with a roll call?
Yes, I can. We have yourself, the Chairperson, Honourable Duant, Honourable Shabalala, Honourable Van der Walt, Honourable King, Honourable Dr. Tembekwayo, Honourable Mashabela, and Honourable Bosho. Those are the 8 members currently in the meeting, Chair.
All right, thank you very much, Llewellyn. I think, honorable members, we need to start because we are starting this week with another committee that's supposed to start at 12. So the sooner we start, the better, so that we can try for all means to be done by at least 12 o'clock. Good morning to everybody. Morning to the members. Morning to the DM, that is the department, executive, and the DG and all the officials of the department, and morning to our parliamentary staff that is here in the meeting. Can we check the apologies, Llewellyn?
Thank you, Chairperson. For the portfolio committee, I have no apologies. I do have an apology for Minister, who won't be able to join us this morning due to cabinet commitments, Chairperson. And then if you want, I can just do the roll call again. It's yourself, Honourable Gigaba, Honourable Aduans, Honourable Shabalala, Honourable Machezi, Honourable Van der Walt, Honourable King, Honourable Dr. Tembekwayo, Honourable Mashabela, Honourable Boshoff. I also see that Honourable Malachi has also joined us. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Okay, on the agenda we are having the state of the reopening of schools, we are having the update on the NSNP, we are having the direction for learners with special education led. I spoke to the DG and we have agreed that he's going to start with the update on the NSNP and then the directions for learners with special needs, and then he's going to do the stage of the reopening of schools last. Can I then get members to adopt our agenda? And of course, after that, we're going to consider the adoption manners. That is after the briefing. Can we adopt then the agenda? Thank you, Honorable Adams. Any seconders?
Honorable Shabalala, seconds.
Thank you very much, Ms. Shabalala. Without waiting any time, I believe the DM is in the meeting. Happy to engage, DM. We are supposed to be bright, but it's very cold actually today for a spring day. Hope you are enjoying it. Let me hand over to you, DM.
Thank you, Chair. Indeed, happy spring day. I'm wearing my floral dress. I plan to wear it today, whether cold or not, I'm going to wear my dress. Chairperson, again, thank you for allowing the department to come and present, and greetings to all the members. Greetings to all the members that were here earlier, and greetings to you, Chair, and greetings to the members from the department and also from the Portfolio Committee officials. Chair, as it was indicated, that we are going to start by the two shorter presentations than the last one. But we are not going to present it word to word, especially the one for the readiness. Because most of the things which are there are known to the Portfolio Committee, especially that we are chasing time, so we should just talk to the presentation and allow members to engage more than to, because it's long and it's full of statistics. So we would love that the DG will talk to the slides, not necessarily presenting word to word, because it will take, it will consume more time for members, yet members did receive the presentations on time. Chair, what I can say is that schools have opened, and yesterday the last cohort of the school community were at school. We know that there will be challenges, yes, to agree, and all the challenges that are coming and the risks identified, the department plans to deal with those risks together with the provinces. So anything that when it's performed for the first time, it will have its existing problems. So operating under COVID-19 is something that never happened before in the country. That's why we'll have regulations, change them from time to time to suit the particular environment at the particular time. That's why even today we are speaking about the direction for learners with special needs, and from time to time we came to the portfolio committees to say now we are changing the directions to suit the situation. So no major incidences have been reported since schools have opened. No major. Yes, minor glitches are there in all the provinces, but no major incidents. It shows that if we can work together and support the department and support the schools, we will win this battle. And we also appreciate the fact that the move by the virus is showing signs that it's a bit frustrated, no longer attacking us as it used to when it started. Okay, allow me to give the DG the opportunity to present. He will assign relevant people to do relevant presentations, but let me give this opportunity to him until he concludes all the presentations. DG, through the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, I give it to you.
PM, I thought you would make it an
announcement. Thank you. DG?
Thank you, DM, honorable members, honorable chair. I'm trying to locate Dr. Whittle. He had a problem last time with connectivity. It might be that he's connected.
DG, I'm here. My apologies. I can't get onto the system, but I'm here.
Okay. Thank you very much. Without any waste of time, Honorable Deputy Minister, I will start with the NSNP as the chair has outlined. And immediately after that, then we'll get into the draft directions for learners with special education needs. Dr. Whittle?
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members. Good morning to the Deputy Minister, the DG, and all the colleagues. This is the overview of what I will address this morning, the mandate of the NSNP, the various responsibilities at the national provincial level, the program and its implementation, the database of the numbers related to the NSNP, our response to COVID, and our revised plans, and then look at some of the different delivery models and feeding modalities that we've adopted during COVID. As well as have a brief reflection on some of the challenges and how we have worked to mitigate those. We have the next one, please. So the school nutrition program is an in-school program, historically, and its strategic goal is to enhance learning capacity and improve access to education. We aim to provide a nutritious meal once a day at around 10 in the morning. We currently feed just over 9.7 million learners in the system. The grant is funded through conditional, the program is funded through a conditional grant. At the moment, that is 7.7 billion rand. It is guided by a conditional grant framework, and so before we're able to implement the program, we have to finalize the framework. And provinces submit before the conclusion, before the end of a particular financial year, they submit business plans to us at the DBE that our DG approves, and then that's submitted to the National Treasury. Next one, please. Can we move to the next one? Okay, so maybe I should continue to talk, Chair, if you allow me. Okay, there we go. So the responsibility of the National Department is to evaluate and approve the provincial business plans. We monitor and provide support to the provinces in terms of how they implement it. The province's responsibility is to manage and implement the program in line with the DORA, and they monitor and provide support to districts, regions, and then to schools. Next one, please. So in terms of how the program is implemented, we target specific equipment at 1-3 schools. About 10 years ago, we introduced the program into secondary schools as well, identified special schools, mostly at 1-3s. And then because of some of the pressure that we have around poorer learners finding themselves in quintile 4 and 5 schools, we do make exceptions for those learners in some of our quintile 4 and 5, and then also through a targeted strategy provide the NSNP to those learners as well. Can we move to the next one? So this is the database. I noticed that the total number of learners, they should be 9.7 and not 8.7. And as at the 26th of August, which was midweek last week, we were feeding 4.4 million learners, which, you know, is quite low for the program. But since most of our learners came back to school during the course of this week, we now expect that the program should be fully implemented and that all 9.7 learners should actually benefit from the program. Next one, please. So the department's response in terms of COVID, when initially the hard lockdown was announced by the president, we worked very closely with the Department of Social Development. We redirected many of the large retail businesses that work with us, Tiger Brands, Pioneer Foods, and others, to provide food parcels that would then grant supply to poorer communities. We have amended the conditional grant framework to specifically accommodate COVID. The grant framework now allows for schools to procure PPEs for volunteer food handlers. We've provided additional sanitation, both in terms of the sanitation of food preparation areas, but also sanitation for the hands of food handlers. We've included a short orientation and training program for volunteer food handlers just to ensure that they are up to date on the latest safety measures for preparing a food. And then we have allowed for a provision that would enable learners in far-flung areas to receive food parcels from schools. Next one, please. So in terms of the plans that we've implemented, as already indicated, the conditional grant framework was amended. Provinces were then asked to amend their business plans. These have been done and submitted to us. We're currently evaluating those plans. The provincial specific plans have looked at three options, and I'll come back to those three options a little bit later on. And then the provinces provide updated numbers to us on a weekly basis in one-on-one meetings that we have with the DG. And then we have improved our monitoring during this time to ensure that the program is in fact open in all of the provinces. Next one, please. This gives you a sense of some of the safety measures that we put in place. Learners are screened when they arrive. They come with their own containers, as you can see. There's a place to wash your hands. And then social distancing is observed in the bottom photograph. In terms of the delivery models, I thought this is important to just indicate to the committees that we use two models to implement the school nutrition program nationally. The one is a centralized procurement model, where the provinces, through an open tender system, every 3 years procure service providers for the program. Five provinces utilize this particular model: Gauteng, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, KZN, and the Western Cape. And then the other is a decentralized model where the provinces transfer funding directly to schools and all the purchases for the program are done directly by school principals. The Eastern Cape, the Free State, the Northern Cape, and the Northwest utilize a decentralized model. This is just a graphic representation of the different models. So the feeding modalities that we've agreed on. So all the grades that phased in, they got feeding at school. So this is the normal process in terms of how the NSNP is implemented. From the 22nd of June, these are the three models that we had agreed on with the provinces. Serving meals at school, which is for learners that are back at school. Learners collecting cooked meals with social distancing and wearing a face mask, as you've seen in some of those photographs, and then the collecting or the delivery of food parcels. And this is specified in the conditional grant adjustment as learners in far-flung areas. This gives you a sense of some of the photographs around the country. This is how the food parcels that we packed and collected by learners or by parents. Next one, please. And these are some of the challenges that we have encountered. As I said, the school nutrition program is an in-school program, and so we've had difficulty because the program is such a huge program, we had difficulty to adjust quickly. Some of the challenges that we've experienced was after we lost the court case and we were instructed to open the program to everybody, we had low uptake in many of our communities. We tried to mitigate that by better communication into the local communities. It was difficult for us to monitor the program because of COVID. As you know, even though our attendance rates are much better than anywhere else in the world, many parents did decide to not allow their children to come to school for schooling, and so would refuse for those learners to come and collect their meals as well. And then, of course, in terms of scholar transport, this has posed a particular difficulty for us, even though we have indicated to the provinces to ensure that they're better able to utilize as the learner transport system so that learners can come and collect their meal. So just in conclusion, Chairperson, the program is now open to everybody. We continue to work with our partners to ensure that learners are able to collect their meals, and we are constantly communicating to communities to indicate to them that, in fact, the program is open and that all learners can come and collect their meals at school. Thanks, Chief.
Titi?
Yes, Advocate Nisa, please.
Thank you, DG. Is somebody going to flag my slides? Thank you. So the purpose of this presentation is to present the proposed amendments to the directions that were published on 23rd June 2020, and this pertains to learners with special educational needs. Next slide, please. The outline of the presentation, I will be addressing the court application received by the Center for Child and Law, the subsequent court settlement agreement entered into between the Center for Child Law and DBE, as well as the amendments that we have now proposed to the direction, and the rest of it also deals with the amendments to the direction. Thank you. Next slide, please. So on the 17th of July 2020, the Center for Child Law brought a court application against the Minister for Basic Education for reviewing and setting aside or declaring invalid the directions published on 23rd June 2020. And the invalidity was based on its deficiency with regards to addressing the LSEN aspect. Next slide, please. We subsequently then entered into a court settlement agreement on the 4th of August 2020, and on purpose of the settlement order, the DBE must amend the directions to cure the deficiencies as identified by the Center for Child Law. This includes addressing the readiness of special school hostels for learners with physical disabilities, intellectual disabilities, epilepsy, and severe to profound intellectual disabilities to remain open, remove the requirement that special school hostels are required to close in their entirety, include a provision for additional infrastructure capacity to be provided to special school hostels where alternatives do not provide for the reasonable accommodation needs of learners with disabilities residing in school hostels, include a provision that guides heads of department to ensure that learners with disabilities who are unable to return to school are provided with appropriate learning and teaching materials, assistive devices, and therapeutic devices while they are at home. Next slide, please. The court settlement order also required that the DBE provide guidelines for learners with physical disabilities, intellectual disabilities, epilepsy, and severe to profound intellectual disabilities. Currently, the guidelines only address autistic learners, the directives address autistic learners as well as learners who are blind, partially sighted, or deaf. And hence, we were required to correct or amend the guidelines to include the latter categories, that is physical disabilities, intellectual disabilities, epilepsy, and severe to profound intellectual disabilities. Also to make amendments to the DBE guidelines for schools on maintaining hygiene during the COVID-19 pandemic to provide measures designed to ensure the safety and health of learners with disabilities at schools, hostels, and offices. The aspects court settlement order in the previous slide that is based on the DB guidelines have been fully addressed. We are now awaiting comments with regards to the guidelines, and that also applies to the guidelines on hygiene measures. Next slide, please. We have then amended the direction to align it with the court settlement agreement, and Direction 8 of the direction is amended by substituting Subdirection 1. In terms of Subdirection 1, we now make it clear that all public schools, including special schools as contemplated by the South African Schools Act, must comply with all directions, guidelines and circulars regarding the reopening of schools. In addition, schools must comply with the guidelines developed for the specific categories of learners with disabilities. Then we make a consequential amendment and we delete subdirections 2 and 3 as it is now incorporated in the subdirection 1 as amended. We then substitute with subdirection 8 of the following direction, and we say indicate that where a learner does not return to school for any of the reasons referred to in direction 5.7, and the reasons that are indicated in 5.7, it provides for an underlying health condition, being self-isolated or quarantined due to COVID-19 symptoms or testing positive for COVID-19, a decision taken by the head of department to close a school or part of a school after consultation with a health official, or a case where the principal or the HOD decides to close a school because it has not complied with the health and safety requirements. Then we say that the head of department should make all reasonable efforts to ensure that the availability and distribution of teaching and learning materials in appropriate modes and access to remote support from teachers, provision or loan of assistive devices for use at home, and provision of and access to therapeutic services where necessary. We then insert a new direction 9 after direction 8. And this particular direction now caters for an amendment to the application form for application for a full or partial exemption, and it allows parents of learners with disabilities to now indicate what kind of assistance they need, and this is indicated in the form. For example, if they require learning and teaching support material, assistive devices, or therapeutic services, those options are now available in the form. Next slide, please. Then we make an amendment to Direction 9. Now, Direction 9, the direction deals with opening of hostels, and we've inserted a new direction for capital A, subparagraph AB, which states that despite Direction 9.4 and Subdirection 9.4 in the directions indicates that or provides that if a hostel is found not to have complied with measures and requirements as confirmed in terms of subdirection 2, the hostel will be closed until such time as the hostel complies with these measures and requirements. No learners will be allowed on the premises of the hostel, and that the principal or chairperson of the governing body or their delegated official must, as soon as reasonably possible, inform the parents, caregiver or designated family member of the learners that the hostel will be closed, request the parent's caregiver or designated family member of the learner to fetch the learner from the hostel, and make arrangements with parent's caregiver or designated family member of the learners to ensure the provision of learning material and continued teaching to learners. So we say that despite this particular provision, in order to provide for necessary reasonable accommodation needs of learners, if a school hostel exceeds the number of learners it can accommodate in accordance with social distancing requirements, the school hostel will not be required to close in its entirety, provided the school must make provision for alternatives in order to ensure the reasonable accommodation of learners in school hostels. Subparagraph E says that when the school cannot provide alternatives as contemplated in 4 capital A subparagraph A, the Provincial Department of Education must provide additional infrastructure capacity for a school hostel. Then we make further directions. Now, this direction is not part of the amendment to this direction 15, which deals with social distancing and the timetabling models, is not part of the fourth settlement order, but we felt that it is imperative to address this issue, as the COFLA regulations talk about gatherings of 50 persons. It seems that there is confusion amongst principals who feel that the gatherings of 50 people apply to schools. And as we are aware that this is not applicable to school because attendance at school is not a public gathering. So in order to dispel this kind of confusion, we have indicated, we've added 15.5. A school that has a large enough facility, such as a school hall, may accommodate more than 50 persons in that facility at a time, provided that all health, safety, and social distancing requirements are complied with. And of course, this will be strictly for educational purposes. So we published the directions for public comment in terms of the court order on the 21st of August 2020, and the return date for comments is the 7th of September, so we are still awaiting comments. Next slide, please. So the recommendation is for the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education to discuss the proposed amendments to the directions published on the 23rd of June 2020. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Advocate Mita. Chair, I'll now proceed with the last question. On a lighter note, Chair, I want to observe that a happy spring day was observed for ladies and not for men. I don't know why, because I'm wearing my floral shirt as well. That's on a lighter note. On a serious note, this is a very comprehensive presentation, as the DM indicated. And the reason why it's so comprehensive, honorable members will recall that we kept on deferring some of our responses to previous meetings to this presentation. But also, as Dr. Whittle correctly observed, we need to show that every week, and we have tried to check how schooling has been running since the end of the break. We did the 12 learners who reported on the 3rd, and then a grade 7 learners who reported on the 11th. And the next group, which was the biggest group, which took us to about 10 million learners, reported on the 24th. And the last group would have reported on the 31st, which was yesterday. So I'm just going to try, and as you can see, the issues that are involved, there are about 28 of them, but I'm just going to hit the punchline. I'm not going to give you details, as the minister correctly pointed out. We've deliberately decided to use a picture of a learner, an 11-year-old learner, who's in an equivalent of grade, class 6, if you like, in Kenya. And honorable members would recall that Kenya has taken a decision to cancel the academic year. And discussing the matter with the CEO of Umalusi and having taken a discussion with the Quality Council of Kenya, it does appear that Kenya has got a policy of dealing with eventualities of this nature, that when there's a major disaster and schooling cannot happen, or when learners are unable to really speak for the end of the year exams, there is a policy that makes provision that they use school-based assessment to get them to go to even universities. And I have said to the CEO of Umalusi, and I would like to take a discussion with the Permanent Secretary of Kenya to get to understand more of what they are doing and look at what other countries in Africa have dealt with COVID-19. I'm sure we can learn a lot from them on this, because there might be worse disasters that might be coming in future. God must forbid, but we have to prepare ourselves for even worse developments than the one that we're going through. And then the next three slides are really about looking at international experience. And just to say to honorable members, the countries that have gone back to school have dealt with the
COVID-19 environment differently. And very interesting to observe Sweden, and I think a few more Scandinavian countries, never closed their schools, and they don't have the substantially changed rules. But even though, the situation is like that in those countries, they have not necessarily experienced high fatality rate compared to countries that close their schools and countries that insist on very stringent rules. And we just make that observation as to how even countries have dealt with the issue of social distancing. Some of them had to bring in extra teachers, and I think they call them temporary teaching staff, to come and assist with social distancing. We have also done that. We'll share with you in the presentation what the implication of this has been. In France, for instance, I think about 70 learners who tested positive in schools, and then those schools had to close temporarily. And they also, when they went back to schooling, it was voluntary until the President Macron, he decided to announce that all schools must then recuperate, which was around May, June. And I'm then going to go to attendance rates. It's one of the issues that we've been tracking, given the fact that we want to link it to possibility of dropout rates. We know that experts have warned us that if learners stay too long at home, the likelihood is that some of them might drop out of the system, early pregnancy, social ills such as drugs taking their toll on some of these learners and so on. So, honorable members will observe that both for teachers and learners in grade 7 and grade 12, and I think if you look at learners in particular, honorable members will observe that the Western Cape in grade 7 has got probably the lowest, and in grade 12, they also have the lowest, and then followed by Northern Cape and so on. We are a bit worried about this. At Eastern Cape, I should have mentioned Eastern Cape also in terms of grade 7 learners. We are worried, but we know that having met with all these provinces every week, Western Cape has really been trying to reach out to parents to encourage them to bring learners to school, and we don't want to believe that this large number of learners would have taken up online learning if it only been few. The majority of these learners are from the poor who don't have access to online learning. We also then request provinces to indicate what measures have been taken to make sure that they improve their services. And then the dropout rate, maybe any day, just a projection by provinces. It might be a worrying factor, but it's very important for us. What we usually encourage provinces to do is take the numbers of those who attend school, and then link it to the numbers of those who are at home with comorbidities, who are doing virtual learning, and those who are apt for home education. And then the variance between all of those then give you a sense of the projection of the dropout rate. And then we also request provinces to encourage schools to follow up about the whereabouts of these learners. Because the cost of dropout to any nation is just too ghastly to contemplate in terms of crime, in terms of social security burden to the state, as the studies have shown and so on. So we have to do something about it. Then the next slide looks at learner exempted from school attendance. As honorable members would know, that the directions which were published on the 23rd of July, if I'm not mistaken, make provision for five categories of learners, those who are exempted from full or partial school attendance, is learners with comorbidities, learners with illnesses other than comorbidities, learners whose parents out of fear decide to just keep them out of school. Online learning being provided by the school or service provider, and of course home education. And we make a distinction between home education and home-based schooling. Home education has been there for many years, and home-based schooling is then what refers to these four categories that are on the screen. We refer to it as home-based schooling. Next slide. The next one is just to demonstrate the support. Honorable members asked questions in the past. What support are you providing to these learners that are at home? Work is given to them. Lesson plans are also given for them to follow, and their work is also controlled, and there is regular interaction between schools and learners. But we request that the two cardinal points are very crucial in making sure that no learner falls within the crack among these learners. The first one is the parent, the second one is the school. The burden is not solely based on the parent. Especially with the categories of learners that we have put in here. The burden solely falls on the parent if out of fear and anxiety, the parent just decided to keep his or her child at home. Whether the child is attending or not, although it's against the law, it's against the South African Schools Act, for this time around, we said we can exercise that option. But with respect to this category, is a joint responsibility in law, says a joint responsibility of the duty of care between the parent slash guardian and the state, and the state in this case, the school supported by the district and the provincial office. Well, next slide. Here we just looked at the returning grades. As we said, state of readiness, we look at facilities, we look at teachers, we also look at the number of learners who are coming in, including learners with special education needs. We also look at cleaners and screeners, whether you've got the requisite numbers that are required, because experts tell us that good and proper cleaning and fumigation and fogging, which are actually banned in South Africa, is the best way to go to keep facilities clean and ready for learners to use them. Next slide. Next slide is really about emergency water and sanitation. What I need to indicate in terms of water, we really focused on six provinces as DBE. The other provinces that indicated that Gauteng, Western Cape and Northern Cape. The other provinces we service them in the money that was identified of 600 million for water and sanitation. And there we're providing a checklist. Mr. Van der Vest then meet with the infrastructure head every day, 6 o'clock in the morning, meetings that we started before we reopened schools to ask very pertinent questions that link to this information that we find here. The next slide. The next one is sanitation. With respect to sanitation, we only service Eastern Cape and Limpopo, and the rest of the other provinces carry that responsibility on their own, but we've also started following up checking with each one of them in terms of what we expect to happen, the units that are provided, whether they are serviced regularly, are there complaints from schools, and how are the schools, the district office, and the province taking all of these complaints. And we provided that information there as well. National, in terms of the support for curriculum coverage, first we focus on 312, look at 312 learners in public ordinary schools, and in your extreme column to the right is your grade 12 learners for learners with special education needs. We want to make sure that urban learners, Honorable Van der Waal, and I'm sure Honorable Van der Waal and Honorable Suker will be very happy to see that we also spoke on an association basically. And the column in the middle is really about providing additional support, broadcast solution, online and virtual programs that we even provided when learners were still at home. We're continuing with those. We have seen an impact particularly in supporting the same 12 learners. And then the next slide is about grade R to grade 11. Just to demonstrate the point that the focus is not only on grade 12, we're also providing the requisite support to grade R to grade 11. And then the next slide is about exams. Just to indicate that because we had to postpone the May-June exams to November-December, we now have an unprecedented number of candidates who will be sitting for these exams, which is 1.1 million, the initial enrollment, and we'll see what the final registration would give us. But this would be the biggest ever. And we have started to look at the numbers. We started to look at the number of exam centers, the marking centers, the markers themselves, and asking questions to provinces what they are doing to make sure that they are indeed ready. What I need to highlight under this section is that our results will be released on the 22nd of February by the minister and 23rd of February by the provinces. Schools would close on the 15th of December, and then we'll go on a short break, and then teachers will come back for marking in January, and they will finish around the 22nd, 23rd of January, and schools will then reopen on the 25th. We are engaging with other assessment bodies because they are likely to finish earlier than us. IEB, the Independent Executive Board, Sakai and the Benchmark, there are four assessment bodies, including ourselves, because they were likely to release their results in January. And there has been a concern from HealthCom, CM, Junior, including USAF, which is also made up of heads of the universities of South Africa, that it might give an unfair advantage to learners who write through those assessment bodies, unfair advantage against the majority of learners, many of whom are poor. So we had a meeting yesterday with IED. We're having a meeting today with Sakai, and then we'll be meeting with Benchmark as well. IED is open to getting the results released more or less the same time as we did in the past, which is very good. The outcomes of yesterday's meeting were good for us, so that we managed that even from public perception of saying the rich always have the advantage over the poor and so on. I thought it's important that I highlight that to the members. Standard operating procedures, we reviewed them to bring in the latest developments and research, so that we avoid getting schools closed for 5 weeks, for 14 days, and experts are now saying 1 day should be more than enough. And if it's not the whole school, if it's the administration, you have to close the whole school, because it takes away contact time for teaching and learning, and it compromises the readiness of the learners to be fully prepared to write end of the year exams. So we brought that in. All provinces confirmed that they received their groups. Standard operating procedures. We've also said to them they need to take measures to ensure uniformity across all schools. Next slide. Psychosocial support is one area we are not very strong in, but we tap into the NGOs that operate in the sector. We also work with social development, which is assisting us a lot, and we also work with faith-based organization. You'll be amazed of the capacity that you find there for trauma counseling from even faith-based organizations. And those, we also work with universities, HEI, to help us provide the requisite support. We also do online counseling. Dr. Whittle has been working with provinces to also use those NGOs who are able to provide online counseling. The next slide is really to share how creative schools have been, including schools in the rural areas, monitoring social distancing, on the ground, staff room, in the classroom. You can see the one slide of the desk shield, which is from KZN, to try and have more learners in the classroom. This, I think we saw it in the Asian countries, which have bigger numbers, instead of spreading more learners out of more classrooms, they brought in desk shields, which have proven to be quite helpful in schools that are unable to even fully utilize your differentiated timetabling. And then we also then ask questions to provinces to indicate how they are monitoring social distancing, and they are doing exceptionally well. And then the wearing of masks, we also monitor, which is the next slide. We monitor the wearing of masks, as honorable members can see, and provinces have to also indicate what are the measures in place to ensure that masks are indeed monitored. Litigation, the litigation section, I have indicated that out of 9 instances that we appeared in court, the court ruled in our favor in 8 instances, including 4 of those instances being in the Concord, the Constitutional Court. The only case that could not win was the case involving the National School Nutrition Program, which created some conflict in my mind and my heart, but my heart won the battle. As the senior counsel said to us, it's very difficult to win a case against a hungry child. So my heart won the battle for that day, and we accepted the outcome of the court. We never even considered even to appeal, to say it would be immoral and just a waste of time and money to try and appeal. So the next question is the National School Nutrition Program. Dr. Whittle has covered that quite extensively, just showcasing some of the food that we provide in our schools. This is according to the menu that is supposed to be followed by all schools, although at times not followed by all of them. And Dr. Whittle also covered this one to indicate the numbers that were fed at school, numbers fed at home, and those different categories that we committed on to court. And we are reporting to the court on the implementation of the structural interdict. Every month we submit sworn affidavits from all the 9 provinces to indicate the numbers, the key challenges, and what we are doing about challenges. And there's a communication flow between us with Equal Education on this matter. And then teachers with comorbidities, learner transport, we also indicated the numbers of learners who are benefiting from learner transport. We also find out what are the measures taken to adhere to the requirements of COVID-19. That applies to learners with special education needs. We have a special arrangement of transport which is provided to schools than the public transport. And then teachers with comorbidities, I have referred to this matter earlier on to indicate that out of the 27,000 applications, 22 of those applications were approved as concessions, and then provinces have started to provide substitute educators. Some of them are also using teacher assistants, and we are coming up with the notion of education assistants, which would cost much less than what we pay for your normal substitute post, because the demand for teachers with comorbidities is just beyond what we can afford. And we thought that we need to bring in young people who could also get into the career of teaching, but not necessarily pay them the salary of what you pay for a substitute educator. And the Department of Public Service and Administration is developing something called Work Remote Policy Framework, which begins to delineate sectors in terms of risks. For instance, they are of the view that health is a high-risk sector, particularly hospitals, but not everyone works in the hospital. Because if you are in the administration or the reception, you are not high-risk. But if you are in the ward, then you are high-risk. And therefore, basic education is deemed to be medium-risk instead of high-risk. And once the framework is finalized, it will have implications for collective agreement 1 of 2020, which allows teachers with comorbidities to work from home. And many of them, we might have to make arrangements to work, go back to school, or look for the suitable accommodation other than home to keep them fully engaged and fully productive. And then the other information that we are providing is SGB posts, and I'm sure many of you would identify with this. These are posts that are paid from school fees and not necessarily paid by the state. We have seen with the hardships that even started with economic recession before lockdown, before COVID-19, many of the schools are now battling to keep people in the post because the parents are defaulting, some are completely unable to pay for school fees. These are either 4 and 5 schools, but there are posts that are paid for by the state over and above the posts that are paid for through school fees. And many of the schools have actually considered to reduce salaries, and some of them are considering to lay off teachers, and they also approached us to consider allowing them to use nonsense standards for school funding. We haven't granted permission in that regard. The letter that we keep discussing, we'll see how it goes. COVID-19 cases, Honorable Fuller Waltz requested us for numbers. We provided the numbers, but in some of the presentations that we've made, some other time, not to the portfolio committee, we actually able to demonstrate the proportion of educators against the total number of the population in the country, both in terms of those who test positive, non-teaching staff, learners, and we even go to fatalities and say, what percentage of this is it to the total population? For instance, with Gauteng, in terms of fatalities, was below 1%, was between 0.75% and 0.82%. The numbers of learners are even far below the international benchmark of learners who suffer fatalities from COVID-19. I've covered fatalities as well. And now on deviation, can move to deviation. Schools that decided to bring in grades earlier than what is indicated on the direction, made provision for that for as long as you can demonstrate that you are ready, you've got all the COVID essentials, and then you are allowed to proceed. It's not only, I must emphasize, it's not only rich schools that are able to do this. Even a small multi-grade schools like the school that I attended, which would even benefit out of an arrangement such as this one, is both poor and rich. Majority, of course, of public and private schools, because their survival depends on their savings and the revenue that they generate, they then took advantage of the deviation. The MECs are also accorded deviation to bring any or to delay them, like the free state. The Free State decided to delay some of the grades because they were of the view that some of their facilities were not ready to take up all the grades at once, and they stuck at them. The rest of the other provinces did not opt for deviation. And then differentiated timetables, we're indicating how many schools opted for Latuning, how many opted for alternate weeks, and how many opted for alternate days, and how many went for hybrids. The decision is made by the school governing body and the school management, not made by the department. There is no directive that goes to the department. Schools have to make decisions based on their context. And context of schools would vary. When we came up with this from the past, that's the message that we communicated to provinces, to districts, and the feedback that we've been getting is that schools, out of their own accord, would decide which model is suitable for their context. And we even go look at the hostel facilities, audited them, look at those who'd be able to comply with social distancing. And I must also indicate you are in the process of reviewing the 1.5 to bring it in line. I mean, you would have seen from international experience, some countries would opt for 1 meter. WHO is recommending 1 meter, and then others 1.5, others like the UK, 1.5 and 2 meters. So we are of the view that we need to review social distancing in schools in particular, especially for primary schools for 1 meter, even for hostel facilities to 1 meter, because in some instances it creates challenges for schools to then require extra accommodation than the one that they have in school premises. So, so far schools are able to cope with that. Disruptions in schools, this has gone down quite drastically, but it's been something that has really been taking a lot of financial resources from the sector. And during lockdown, we've seen, in fact, after lockdown, when we just started to reopen, many schools were disrupted by quotas, were disrupted by school governing bodies. And I think ever since we came back from the break, the disruptions have gone down. And the ability of the HLTC, which we'll see later, to be on the ground and engaged with communities and civil society also has gone up. The next one is the QLTC. QLTC is alive and well, moving in most provinces except for the Western Cape. The Western Cape is of the view that they use a different model other than the QLTC. QLCC would involve governing body information at local level, would involve unions, would involve your faith-based organizations, you know, your pastors, faith leaders and so on would form part of that to help to mobilize the society to support schooling and support the provision of quality education. And then the next one is vandalism in schools. It has really taken a toll on many schools and caused a major disruption in terms of the running of schools. And but it has gone down. Vandalism has really gone down ever since we came back from the break. And then the next slide is about procurement of COVID-19 essentials. And may I just emphasize the point that specifications are determined by National Treasury. It have to be followed by everyone. National Treasury provides specifications on COVID essentials. They would have worked with the Department of Health, worked with the Department of Trade and Industry, and the rest of us to procure in terms of the specifications provided by the Department by National Treasury. And then some of the questions that we asked there is the number of learners who require this COVID essential date that the procurement was made, and then the date of delivery. And then we also continue to find out how many masks were of poor quality. And then we also look at the value of those masks which returned. And how many grades or learners experience shortages of masks. This is some of the information that we follow up with provinces. And we also go on to look at things like measures in place to ensure that schools don't run out of masks. In other words, stock keeping, making sure that you maintain your stock, because these masks have to be provided every 3 months. If honorable members were not aware, we provide them every 3 months, a pair of masks are provided to learners, educators, non-teaching staff. And we also check for learners with special education needs, special COVID specials for those learners, whether they are provided, and there's regular check. Then the last section is an interim audit done by the Auditor General as per the request of the President to audit all the COVID essentials. We have received the report. Honorable members will be receiving this report. It will be completed end of this month, the first part of the report, and I think the last part of the interim report will be completed in November. And this committee is already well ahead. We're giving you what is emerging from the interim audit report from the Auditor General. Having audited DBE and all the 9 provinces, and what we are doing as DBE is to follow up on the findings, like the utilization of data and the early system, because some of the findings indicated that because there were shortages and so on, the auditors were of the view that we don't utilize our data properly or we don't maintain our data regularly. The issue of deficiency in the quality of masks, we dealt with it earlier on. Guidelines for districts and schools to be able to verify the quality of the product, but also non-compliance with the National Treasury Instruction Note, and also non-compliance with SPF legislation, as well as addressing control weaknesses by all the 9 provinces. This was also presented at CEM. Every week, we request provinces to give us an update on how they are addressing all these deficiencies. So the interim audit is intended to ensure that at year end, all these are identified businesses, because we continue to procure COVID essentials, because we are providing them, as I've indicated, every 3 months, that people are here. It must be improvement. And maybe say at first, it might have been an oversight. It can be an oversight next time around and throughout as you continue to do your work. And for as long as there is no theft, there is no benefit, and then the state has not lost money, it's just a donation, you take appropriate action as well. Thank you, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Chairperson, and Honorable Minister. I've really tried to keep it within about 30 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, E.T. You've done very well with time. Honorable members, there's the 3 presentations from DBE. Can I know? And there is the end of Honorable Tucker. Any other hands?
Chairperson?
Honorable Tuela?
Yes.
Honorable King, please.
Honorable King?
Tembeguayo, please.
Honorable Doctor Tembeguayo? Can we proceed in that order in the meantime? Honorable Tucker?
Chairperson, thank you so much for the DBE for the presentation. I will start with that. I just have a few comments that I want to make, and then I have a few questions. The first is that I just missed the part of the directive that was presented by the advocate, but some of the complaints that we have received, and I think I've highlighted it before, is that parents feel that they are being pressurized, even threatened, to get their children back into school. And I'm talking about the areas such as the Western Cape that has in some places where parents are extremely anxious to send their children back to school. Some of our constituents in this two-week period, we have monitored the attendance of school in a specific area, and it trends with what the DBE, the DG has reported. And my question really around that is that there needs to be a communication clearly made to provinces that parents cannot be forced to send their children to school. And in many cases, it becomes very emotive, and it fuels the disruptions or the mobilizing of disruptions of schools in certain areas. So I just want to bring that to the DG's attention as well, because we cannot usurp this authority of parents. It is not politicking when I mention this. It is really an issue that needs to be attended to. Then, in terms of the slides where the DBE has spoken of, I'm glad the DG spoke about Kenya and the different assessments that they're using. However, I want to know whether the DBE is going to wait to do those assessments, because we by conducting alternative assessments rather than the assessments that we're currently doing, whether there is a benchmark being done to look at different assessments to be applied, and not just for future, but especially now with the disruptions that we have had with the school year. There are children that have registered but have not come back to school. So how are those kids that have not come back to school, that didn't do class assessments, are they going to be allowed to do their exams? Then in terms of the benchmark exercise that the DBE did in the presentation, the countries which DBE has reported on with regard to school opening are not similar to South Africa. And the research should be conducted with countries that are comparable to us. So the top 10 countries that are most affected by COVID-19 that are similar to us, for instance, 5 BRIC countries like Brazil or India or Russia, and there are a number of middle-income countries that are falls under the top 10 that you could use. Is it possible to make a comparison with those countries that are similar to us rather than countries that are European countries that are not similar to us? And then in terms of the benchmarking of assessments that I've spoken of, again, can we get a report to look at a different kind of assessment for the school leaving cohort in the face of COVID-19 and not have it for other pandemics that may come in future? And then I've asked about the matric registration with the provincial department, such as the Western Cape. It was done before the 30th, others the 13th or 15th. Will the DBE grant concession so that those learners that are registered can present themselves and come and write? Then in terms of the school attendance figures, the dropout rate, it doesn't make sense when you look at the slide check and you see the number of learners that has not come, and you look at the, for instance, I looked under Mpumalanga, I think it was 87. The correlation between the numbers and the dropout rate doesn't make sense. So I just want to know if the DBE can please revisit those areas of the report that the DG made comments that they will be visiting or meeting with provinces weekly. So if we can get an update on those, this will, because the impact is important to understand. And then in terms of the dropout as well, what actions are the DBE taking with the Department of Social Development to ensure that those children that are receiving grants are actually attending school that they are learning at home, so that we be able to, especially at-risk children, that we can put in measures in place to keep those kids within the system. I think, Chair, I don't know how much time I have, but I will end with this on the National Senior Certificate for Adults. We have asked the question before, when this will be implemented. And right now, it is a measure that we can use in South Africa to ensure that the kids that does not complete matric, that falls within a certain age, can at least complete their schooling and go on with further education. So if the department can also give us an idea on when and whether they urgently will develop these programs to run in tandem with a second chance matric in order for us to, again, keep children, specifically and young adults, within the education system and get them not to fall out of the system. Those are my questions, Chair. Thank you.
Chairperson, good morning, and good morning to your colleagues. Am I audible? Chair?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Thank you. All right, thank you very much. Let me welcome the presentation, all the presentations, and they do good. And just one comment from me with regard to the current teacher-learner ratio. I must say, of the very few schools that I visited, the teachers are very happy and they wish that the situation continue into the future because it is workable and they are able to interact very well with the learners, with a small number of learners in the classes. And probably it's something that the department will have to look at going into the future. The second thing that I would like to ask, not in necessarily in the order of the presentation, but I've noted a few things. The provinces with regard to the National School Nutrition Program, some provinces opted for a centralized model of procuring services, while others opted for a decentralized model. Given the challenges around the National School Nutrition Program, where possible in some situations you find that there are late deliveries or no deliveries at all, which of the two models probably would it's working better in terms of providing the services on time, the decentralized or centralized? And given also the high levels of reported corruption and inflated prices, which probably will the DPE recommend in order to spread the risk of corrupt activities? The second matter relates to the school dropout rate, and Honorable Sue has probably touched on it. It's inconceivable, I think it's Limpopo, to suggest that probably in the province, as big as Limpopo, you'll probably have a dropout rate of 87 and 60 learners. It's unbelievable. And I don't know how they collect the stats and also predict that. I just think it's unbelievably low compared to all the other provinces. Now, for the learners that are sitting at home, learning from home, how are they monitored to ensure that they meet the requirements to be assessed at the end of the academic year? Finally, the substitute educator versus the assistant teacher. And did you also indicated that when they use assistant teachers, the cost is very low as compared to a substitute educator? What I would like to know, what are the requirements that one should meet in order to be considered an assistant teacher? Thank you.
Hello.
Thank you, Chair.
Can you hear me? Honorable King, I think there's something wrong with your line. I cannot hear you at all.
Good morning, everyone.
Honorable Sugar.
Hi, Christopher.
Honorable Sugar. Hello. Mari Sugar.
Chairperson, I've muted everybody, so you can just put your mic back on.
Okay. All right. No, it's fine. We can proceed with Honorable King.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. And thank you once again for your thoughtful presentation. First, I'm going to start on the school nutrition program. When we look at DSPs that actually took over some of the feeding of our learners in our areas, I just wanted to find out how successful were they in actually ensuring that most of our learners actually did receive some form of nutrition. I know they added out food parcels, but the question that I asked previously, which I received by the end of June, it basically just stated that 500,000 food parcels were successfully delivered, considering that we also had misappropriation of funds when it came to the food parcels. So how effective were they really? What report was given? And once again, I'm asked that they actually present to us what they've done during their time. They were tasked to take over this program for us. Also, the schools that are affected with theft of food parcels, how many were there actually? Because I read some articles that there were food parcels that were stolen from schools, so we would just like to know how many schools were affected per province. Food prices, I've mentioned this before, is increasing, it has increased. It basically means that suppliers will not be able to supply the requisite amount of food in a long period. And we also need to consider that there were more, that there are going to be more learners on the school nutrition program, given the effect of the unemployment rate that was affected and caused by the COVID-19. So you once said that there were talks that you had with National Treasury. So how far are we with regarding the talks with National Treasury to see if we can source some extra funding to cover the shortfall on the school nutrition program? Then learners with special needs, I'm very glad that the directive was changed, but I also looked at it and I have some questions regarding that, but I'm very happy that it was changed. Only thing that I would love to know is, per province, how many learners were actually assisted with therapeutic assistance, support material, so that we at least can get it just as set on the system. This is how many we have for province, and these are the ones that was assisted, and how specifically there was assisted. So I would have loved to have seen that in the report as well. With the reopening of schools, when it came to school feeding scheme, I mentioned this last week, that it would be nice if we could have seen what the department actually set forth to the court in how they were going to address this specific challenge that they are faced with on providing school nutrition, even though schools are closed, and how specifically monitoring what's going to be done for the province. So if we could have had that as the committee, then at least we can make insightful assessment to see that no, it's happening, no, it's not happening, or the plans are reasonable, or the plans are not reasonable, and this is what we suggest should have been done. So if that can be presented to us, it would be really helpful. Then when it came to the PPEs, for me, it's concerning because we do know that in some provinces, there are PPEs, tender processes that are questionable. I thought you would have highlighted these as well when it came to the PPEs. How many tenders are in question? How much spent per province on most of the PPEs? So that we can get an idea of corruption that did take place. No, there wasn't corruption. It was just an oversight. So if we can get a report on that, so that is also what's lacking in this report. And lastly, I wanted to find out, has there ever been research done with some sort of chemical that's being used and its prolonged effects that it might have on learners, teachers, and staff with a prolonged use? Because, like I told you last week, I went through some articles and I did some research, and then you would find that some chemicals being used, I know the directive will come from you, but have you done some research to find out if some of the chemicals will not be any harmful to some of our learners, because we cannot protect them at school, and yet we actually make them sick with the type of products that we use? Because I've already engaged with some schools, especially with learners that are feeling sickly, or their chest burns, their hands burn because of the sanitation
that is given to them at school. So have you ever taken that into consideration?
Thank you.
Good morning and thank you, Chairperson. It was mentioned that vandalism has reduced, but we have sporadic extreme cases that are happening. For an example, the admin block in Mpumalanga School, Chayaza Secondary School in Kusu, in the Bushbuck Ridge local municipality, which was burnt down, and which means the whole information of the school has been lost through this fire. My question is there anything that can be done or that has been done to help rebuild this admin block and to help the school to function normally? And the second one is, even though it was asked, is about the NSNP delivery modes, the two delivery modes, and namely the centralized procurement and decentralized procurement. My question is, we are one country and there's only one DBE system. Why can't we apply strictly the centralized procurement, since according to me, the decentralized procurement has got some other aspects of fraudulency within it. It would be better maybe if we can just choose one delivery mode for the purpose of us to work well within the DBE. And the third one is the parent. It's about the parent and school involvement, but more specifically on the parent involvement. My question is, we have in our country a child-headed families, and my question is that there are in some other families where there is no possibility of any parental guidance for the children there because the child-headed families, and maybe in some of them, they never had an opportunity to go to school, so they cannot provide any guidance. Is there any support for such cases within our department? And the last one is referred to the head of infrastructure head, the one who meets with the MECs or the heads on daily basis, in connection with the use of the 600 million for water and sanitation, to ask him about one and the same questions that I usually ask, based on Mahumani High School, to say, please, mister, this school has got only one toilet that caters for 600 learners, inclusive of their educators. Can't you provide at least some toilets, at least 10 toilets for this school, because you have 600 million at your exposure to use definitely for water and sanitation. Thank you.
Any other hands?
Chair, thank you, Chair, and thank you to the department for the presentation. I have to say that I'm glad that, you know, majority, almost all our learners have gone back to school, and my biggest concern is, you know, those that haven't gone back. I know that the issue of, you know, learners not being comfortable going to school and, you know, sort of worried about their health and parents holding them back. But there could also be the issue of, you know, dropping out eventually after you haven't been at school for such a long time. So I'm a bit concerned about, you know, what is it that the department is going to do to ensure that, like, you know, those learners that are not getting any kind of education while sitting at home, while even now maybe looking for job opportunities, that, you know, that you encourage them to eventually come back to school, you know, so that, you know, they can be able to complete their matric. Also, you know, the issue of social distancing. I have to say that that's one positive thing that we have been able to end or gain from the COVID-19 regulations, which means that, you know, our learners will have, as one of the members has said, that, you know, teachers, they feel like, you know, there is that kind of, teachers can be able to connect with the learners because of the smaller classrooms. I just want to find out, going forward, can we adopt that and be the norm? Can it be looked at in terms of our resourcing and also our budgeting to ensure that we get more teachers, and also that maybe, I don't know if it's possible that we can have the platooning or the different types of models that has been.
I have lost you. Oh, sorry. Okay, I'm sorry. Which part?
Okay. I don't know where did I lose you. But okay, so going forward to, in terms of the social distancing in classes, like the fact that, like, you know, now we have 20 learners in a classroom, can we adopt that going forward? And also take into consideration that put that in be part of resourcing of schools and also having an extra budget so that we can have more teachers and have more classrooms, or even to say that, you know, we permanently have the different models that have been adopted by the different schools, like platooning or even the hybrid system that the DG was talking about. The other issue that I have also is that I want to find out from the DG. I've read, you know, a lot of reports on online learning, that online learning is not as effective. So eventually, we all have to go to, you know, go back to face-to-face teaching. But then you say that there are schools who are going in a hybrid system. What is it that is not working on that online, despite the fact that, you know, you have a learner that has all the gadgets that they need, also have data, but yet the you know, teachers are not finding online learning to be that effective. What is it that, you know, that you have seen that you think that, you know, we have to work on, or even the schools that are now going specifically on hybrid? What are they saying about online? Are they seeing it as a type of teaching method that can, going forward, that can actually be utilized, even if it means can be a hybrid, which could be that, you know, maybe certain learners stay at home and the other one in class, and then vice versa, the ones that were at home come back to school and all that. Like, how can we make it? Because I see that as that could be our way going forward, because then that means that we can have you know, more rich in terms of ensuring that maybe we get better teachers. If a child is in Bloemfontein and be able to get a teacher from Joburg on online, teaching them on math, one who has maybe specialty in certain areas. So is it something that, you know, that the department is looking into to say, what is it that is, doesn't work at the moment, that people are worried about, and how can we be able to, going forward, to resolve that so that we really try to move towards that direction?
Thank you, DG, and thank you, Chen. Yes.
Yeah.
You can proceed. In fact, you are covered in most of the questions, but we'll add on the issue of the National Pre-Nutrition Program, which is a necessary program that aims to promote good nutrition, especially among poor learners from rural areas. Dropouts and poor attendance are normally caused by lack of food and poverty. When learners aid their means, they perform well better at school because they are not distracted by hunger during teaching days. But he proposed that the department must target poor learners and give them food parcels to eat, even at home, for consistency and convenience. Our biggest concern, Jefferson, is the service provider who feed our learners with food containing pieces of bottles, as we have seen with some incidents of the Kukine district in the past years. So the department must award contracts to service providers who will not kill our children, but nourish their bodies with healthy food. So thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Masabela. I think it's those are the input from the honorable members. I have got just few things to raise as well, DM and DG. One thing that I am raising my concern on the, I understand this is the projection of dropout, but I think I'm raising it because those dropouts, my view is that they are from your poor schools, which is your quintiles 1 to 3, and definitely those are our poor households in our country. And I'm just raising it as the concern that probably we should or we need to try and get those children back in class. I do not have an idea how, but I think there needs to be a concerted effort to try and get those children back in class. It is really worrying. And I'm raising that as a public representative, but also as a parent generally, because you don't want to have children that are not exposed in this time of a day. The second issue that I want to raise, you know, when we were still at school, which is not far ago, but far ago, we had activities where we were planting our own food in the garden, like your vegetables, your spinach, your carrot, and I don't know if it's still the case in many schools now, and if that is the case, how does that work with the together with the school nutrition program that is the program that is there and that is meant to feed the learners on daily basis? Or rather, to reframe my question, is who accounts for it? Is it the principal? Is it the SGB? And generally, and how it works? Because remember, we were just the kids then. We did not know really what we were doing that for, but we did it. And it was for our benefits to eat as well at school. And then the other point that I want to raise, I'm just thinking out loud the MNDG. What if we can have another peak? What if we can have a situation that would cause our learners to sit at home and not be able to attend, whether it's 1 or 2 weeks or whatever. If we can have such a situation, how ready are we as a department? What do you think? Do you think that we will be able to pull through this academic year if we can have another unforeseen circumstance that can force us to not to be at school? And the last issue that I want to raise
is the issue of your substitution, your teachers that are substituting now in the classroom because of the teachers that are having comorbidities. Can we be clarified in terms of the impact in the management of the department? How is that impacting the department? And have you been able to substitute all the teachers that are needed? And if that is not the case, what is happening then to the kids that do not necessarily have teachers in classroom as we are speaking? Because the school now is continuing, of course, not really normal, because I believe in many schools learners are alternating days to go to school. So how are we tracking the issue of the substitution of teachers? And on that note, let me give you DM.
Chairperson, thank you so much. We really, really appreciate the questions and the suggestions by members of the portfolio committee. And the questions really show that members do research and do go through what the department is doing. And that really pleases the department. Chair, if maybe I can attempt some of the questions before giving to Chichi and the team, because though it's only 7 members, but the questions are far much more than the 7 members. And I can see that the most issue today is about school nutrition and the dropout. The dropout rate asked by Honorable Sukers, almost all the members, in fact, that the concern is about the dropout. What we need to understand, Chair, is that we are operating under an abnormal situation. It's not normal, and that's why we even envisage the number of dropouts to say this, when we look at the trend, this is what we can go with the huge number of dropouts. What I can indicate here, Chair, is not that all the children that did not come back to school are from quintile 1-3. Most of the time, quintile 1-3 is not that much affected. Those that are affected is quintile 4 and 5. Yes, all the quintiles are affected, but I'm saying quintile 4 and 5. You can see in the report presentation by the DG that the Western Cape, including grade 12, most learners have not come back to school. And then Western Cape is a bit more affluent. When we can look at the other rural provinces, learners, of course, they come to school. The reasons, they vary. Sometimes it's the comorbidity. Which parents reported to school? And where parents have reported to schools, we know those learners, that these are the number of learners that have not come back to school due to. And then there are those parents who just feel they are afraid to take their children back to school. And they did not even report to schools. Because there is a call, there must be a communication, active communication between the school and the parents. So if a parent just decides to withhold the child and not report to school, it becomes a problem. That's why we count the number of the so-called dropouts. And some parents maybe, out of the lack of knowledge and information, which we try, of course, to communicate to parents through our schools and through the STB associations, that if your child, you don't want your child to go back to school because you are afraid, report that case and say my child will go back next year these are the things that we always communicate to parents, and some might be comorbidity that parents are not reporting. That it leads to us saying this is the number of learners that might not come back. But as a department, we are working closely with the schools to keep on tracking those learners that have not come back to school, and also communicate with parents so that they bring the learners back to school come next year. Yes, there was a question that what plans do we have about those learners? They are still learners, they communicate with their schools, as long as they are still within the school going age, they will be accommodated in their schools, but they will reapply, because it means if you just disappear, then you get deregistered. And when you are deregistered, then for you to be admitted again, you must apply. And which is what is going to be done. There were many questions about the school nutrition program, what challenges were faced by provinces in the supplying school nutrition during the lockdown, especially during when the children were still not in school. But we have a challenge, Chair, when we say how many schools the province, how many, we came here not ready for that. We presented lots of statistics. And had members maybe indicated that you must bring these challenges, but we have noted it, and we are going to indicate, because what we received as a department was that children are going to school. Other challenges were that, like Minister indicated to the Control Committee last time, that some parents would say our children are not dogs, that they can just be called to receive food and not to be educated. They will tell their children not going to school to receive food. And we cannot say that is a problem of the department necessarily, because it's a choice of a particular parent. And they even said that in the social media, that they make our children to look like dogs. How can they just call them to come and eat as if we don't feed them at home? And the school nutrition, its customers are the poor. That's why we feed quintile 1, 2, and 3. I understand members saying that we need to focus on the poor. And those poor learners from quintile 1, 2, and 3 are the beneficiaries of school nutrition. So, yes, that's why we went with social development, that those that we cannot reach, social development handed over food parcels, because the families which receive food parcels are the same families where the learners that are fed at school come from. If social development has given food parcels, then our children will benefit from those food parcels at home than calling them. That's the system that we were using together with social development. And yes, I understand the question about what is it that you are going to do, or what challenges were faced by social development. Those ones, I think, will be reported in the next meeting. There's a question about how many tenders the province on the PPEs. Colleagues, if that has not been part of the report today, especially to report on the service providers appointed the province, is something that is a bit new, which we are going to work on that. We always say, members, let's refrain from asking questions now, especially statistical questions, that cannot tell us how many schools, how many teachers, how many. It may not help us now. If we need those stats, let's write to the department to say how many schools. Yes, specific questions like Maumane school in Limpopo. Those, yes, we welcome, but at the same time, it needs us to go back to Limpopo. Yes, questions like vandalism. We say vandalism has been reduced. We are not saying it's been eradicated. New things will come out, like your chayaza. We did not expect that that can happen, but the province, I believe, that immediately after the ban down of the admin block of chayaza, the province has tried something. There was a question about assistant teachers and substitute teachers, PG, which you'll explain better. But and the question about how does it impact on the fiscal of the department? It's very true. It does affect us negatively, especially when we have to substitute all the comorbidities and other sicknesses, your accouchment leave, etc., etc. Because the posts that were that are created for substitutes are looking at that and are minimal. So now COVID-19 has increased that space, and in which the budget of the department has not covered that, because we did not know about it when the budget was done. And remember, education gets its budget from the entire system, from National Treasury, who also allocates to other departments. So we are given the budget in terms of the number of teachers, the number of officials, the number of learners, and at a time it did not take into account the COVID-19. And again, due to COVID-19, some cuts were made also from the department, and it tells now that what we had is no longer what we have now. So, and that creates problems. That's why not all teachers will be appointed as substitute teachers, will appoint as assistant teachers, as DG indicated on that. That if we can just fill all the posts as substitutes, the department will collapse. But DG will allude further on that one. I just felt that let me just take these questions which were cutting across. The dropout as well as the school nutrition. But currently, there's about this centralized and decentralized, and so what works better. Remember, decisions, yes, we can put guidelines as national departments to provinces to say this is a guideline on school nutrition, we opt for this. But centralized model has its own shortcomings. And decentralized also has its own shortcomings. So a province will decide on which one will work better for a particular province and which one, because even at school level, you'll still have challenges like the school did not procure food for the learners, and there's a challenge. And on the centralized, again, you will get issues like litigations, etc., where people want to be given tenders. I know that there's a question that only credible service providers must be given. Some, because life is not static. Life has got its own challenges. You find that the person when he was appointed was, the company was credible. And in the process, the company experienced challenges due to other projects that the service provider might be engaged on, and fail to give food to the learner. And yet, for the past 2 years, the company was doing it very well. And now, because of the challenges that the company is facing, then they start to give us challenges also. So there can be no one-size-fits-all. We look at individual situations, and then they feel that, okay, this model is good for us. Okay, let me give DG to and also share with members to put more flesh on what I have just said. DG, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The GM has covered some of the questions, so I will not attempt to raise the questions. Honorable Speaker, well, I think you've made your point about our inability to communicate as effective as we should. Parents do have an option decide to keep their children at home, and they will have to put up with the consequences of exercising their option. But parents do not have a right to disrupt schools because they don't want their children to attend schools. We've seen that in the Western Cape as well. And you have helped us a lot in creating the opportunity for us to address parents to make them aware of their options. And I suspect that that opportunity that you also created for us, organizing parents online, that we could address them, help them a lot to understand that they don't have to be at schools, but they can just keep their children at home if they so wish. And the issue of alternative assessment was addressed by the presentation that Dr. Maboya made in the last portfolio committee of the risk adjusted differentiated approach to curriculum and assessment. And indeed, the team is still doing work now to make sure that we make alternative assessments than the traditional methods for approach to assessment available, especially in the context of COVID-19 and going for project-based assessment, for instance, rather than your exam or your classical or traditional test. These are the alternative assessment methods that the team is working on and is communicating to schools and reminding teachers about, they were trained about, which are options that are available. The assessment book, I refer to three assessment books. I might have been misunderstood, or maybe I might have been a bit inarticulate in making this point. When I talk about benchmark is an assessment body. You've got IED, is an assessment body. You've got Sakai, is an assessment body for grade 12. These are the bodies that we've been meeting with, so that they don't release the grade 12 results in January and we release in February, because it's going to create a problem in terms of public perception, which I have explained in the presentation. Hurriedly so. Concession for learners who are registered, learners who are registered for grade 12, if they are unable to write November to November, there's an opportunity coming next year, May, June, and we intend bringing it a bit forward, maybe bringing it around April. May, we've spoken to a forum of universities of South Africa, who says it's got the opportunity to enroll learners in July, over and above getting them enrolled beginning of the year. And by the way, even universities, there are only five universities that are going to finish around November, December. Only five. And most of those universities are, of course, your previously advantaged universities. Only five. The others are going to finish around February, March. And the last group is going to finish around maybe April, May, June. And those are in the main of previously disadvantaged universities. And this information came from both the minister and the DG in forums that I attended. So it's about the readiness of universities to receive these grade 12 learners would be coming from our universities. So our release of the results on the 22nd and the 23rd of February, it's in line. So they should be able to get spaces in the universities of the would be ready for them. And then correlation, there was an issue about research should be done with countries that are comparable to us. We'd love to do so, but those countries have not gone back to school. And that's the point that I made even when you presented for the first time to this committee about our plan to go back to school. And people said, your examples are overseas. I said, give me examples in Africa or give me examples in Asia. They are not there. Countries have not prepared to go back because COVID-19 started impacting on these countries before. Italy, you know, Italy, because they were in Spain, and so they were there. That's to be hit by this. Of course, this comes from China. We've done our benchmark with China as well, and we've not covered all the countries that have done a benchmark. Finland, we've done a benchmark with them as well. And we've also done some research with Mozambique, now that Mozambique also has gone there. But this, which we have shared with you, are countries that have now stabilized, went back to school much earlier than most. And unfortunately, your BRICS countries, except for China, of course, India, I'm not sure about India. I haven't seen anything about India as yet from their data. So we'd love to benchmark with developing countries. We'd love to benchmark with BRICS countries. But unfortunately, they have not gone back to school early enough so that we could learn from them. Okay, and then the issue of the DM address, the correlation between attendance rate and dropout rate. I did humbly caution that it's early days for these numbers to make perfect sense. And in fact, you started them 2 weeks ago, and you wouldn't expect them to be really perfect and be able to tally to the T. And therefore, give us time to work on them. They are 90% better than the first week when we started. And as we go along, I think they will tally much more and would make more sense to many of us. And then the issue of the actions taken with DSB for learners receiving grants, we have not done this. Thank you very much. We'll follow up with the Department of Social Development on this, so that learners who are receiving grants shouldn't fall within the cracks as well. Giving multiple opportunities to young people, I've indicated that we have been so, and we'll give them another opportunity to bring it forward much earlier than what would have happened if things were normal. So we are giving more opportunities to these young people, young adults. Honorable Siwela, learner teacher ratio, which is what Honorable Machete also raised. I do wish that we could remain with this learner teacher ratio, but unfortunately, we do not necessarily have the resources at the moment, especially going forward, things might get even worse to keep us like this forever. We are battling to keep the sector afloat now, and you would have seen from the replacement of teachers with comorbidities, because more smaller classes require more teachers and so on. But we wish that we could keep this like this. And I think I shouldn't say this. I nearly said, let me give an example with myself. I come from a family of 9 siblings. I only have 3 children, and 9 of us have an average of 2 children. So the education and having access to services of government, family planning, and other things help us to be able to afford government to provide much more favorable learner teacher ratio. I really tried my diplomatic skills. I hope that they have helped. And then NSNCD is of the centralized development. Yeah, and Honorable Dr. Tendekwayo, this was a bit surprising for me. Honorable Mashabela says, no, decentralized. Honorable Tendekwayo says, no, centralized. I would have expected at least both of them to say decentralized. If you ask me, and maybe from DM has really tried to explain this, but where I had worked and I have succeeded in influencing development, you'll see a decentralized model because there's no medical person to get, you know, to benefit from, you know, payment for services and so on. And therefore, all the money is likely to benefit the feeding of the learner at school, because all that you do would be to pay an allowance to food handlers. There's no company in between that you need to pay. That's a decentralized model, Honorable Tendekwayo. And if you ask me, I'm strongly in favor of a decentralized model. Got its weaknesses. The centralized model also has its weaknesses. Honorable Mashabela pointed out one of those companies were fighting among themselves, and they did all kinds of things. In some of the provinces, Northwest, I worked there, brought in a decentralized model. Eastern Cape, I worked there, it was a centralized, decentralized. So there are pros and cons for both, but I think the decentralized model, in my view, would benefit learners more than a centralized model. And Honorable Siwela also pointed out issues of corruption, etc., and etc. He also referred to the issue of the dropout rate. Remember, Honorable Siwela, 87 and 67 in the Popo was based on initial figures of 3,000. And I'm sure in the long run, we should be getting the picture much better. Those numbers might not be precise as well, and because we're saying to them, give us a projection, but it must be an intelligent guess based on the attendance rate and those learners that you cannot account for. So I think the numbers should be getting better over time. How learners at home are monitored to meet the required standards? Well, there is an arrangement of learners who are at home between parents and learners, as well as the school where those learners would have been attached. So as I said, work is given to those learners, and they also write and keep work. They do write the controlled classwork. They do write tests as far as it can be also supervised by parents and other people who would be able to do so. So there is that arrangement between the home and the school. Honorable King, the issue of the food parcel bill, Dr. Whitney could respond a little bit to that. But I must also just caution that wouldn't be able to give out food parcels that social development would be able to give. Given the fact that I've raised this matter before, the allocation per learner is roughly 50 per learner, and therefore if you talk about food parcels, it wouldn't cover a learner substantially over a long period of time. And the authority can explain that our food parcels would be much smaller than the food parcels we probably get from social development and would not be able to provide it as regular social development. Is Treasury going to top up NSMP? I am not aware of that. The so-called saving that we have made was to avoid budget cuts, which as part of the motivation, we indicated that we're going to use it, among others, for food parcels, and that we're going to be provided to learners. And to my understanding, this the allocation should carry us through up to the end of the financial year. Dr. Whitney can also comment in terms of discussions with Treasury to top up the current allocation in the grant. How many learners were assisted with therapeutic CED? Yes, indeed, we have not provided this information, as Deputy Minister indicated. I think our report that we have closed, in fact, we said that in the opening remarks, to the state of the reopening is by number. It's driven by statistics, because we know our representatives are people who appreciate numbers. We tried quite a lot to provide numbers, and we improving and firming up those numbers as we grow. NSLP challenges and plans, slide number 40, provides for challenges and mitigation. We summarize that. Slide number 40 is in there, but individual plans of provinces and the report that is provided to the court also detail some of these things which you could make available if honorable members would want to have access to them. And then PPEs, the tender processes, from the report that we received from the Auditor General, who would have put it in this presentation. If you come across that, because it's going to be tabled with you, then it means that we would have avoided presenting it to you. But the report that we have received doesn't have anything that refers to corruption related to tender processes from the report that we received, interim report, audit report that we received from the Auditor General. Research on chemicals that are being used, some which can be harmful. Well, we've not conducted a research as yet, but I must also say that we shouldn't forget that other than sanitizers, basic hygiene of washing hands with water and soap could be an alternative even to sanitizers, the use of sanitizers and other things. But I'm sure that Dr. Wixson, team will look at whether we want to, because the skins of the human beings would react to different substances differently, and it would be difficult to get substances that, unless if they are outrightly harmful to everyone, then we have to do something about them. But if they are not harmful, some people then react negatively to alcohol, and there's nothing wrong about the 70% of alcohol that is in there. In fact, there's everything right with that alcohol, so that it's able to kill germs, if it's 70% content of it. But it does that people skin react differently to some of these chemicals. We did come across this, and our advice was that in the interim, just use water and soap instead of using sanitizers, which should be available in our schools. Honorable Tembekwayo, vandalism, the Deputy Minister responded to this about this school that you have cited. I've spoken to the issue of the two models, decentralized, decentralized, and have indicated my own experience and the choice that I would make. Child-headed families, taking that it is an exception more than a norm. And of course, teachers then become parents in instances of child-headed families. Both officials and teachers become parents, and they step in, and the neighbor. Remember that it takes the whole village to raise the child. No child in an African setting is often, or we don't even have that notion. That's why I'm not sure that you have an equivalent nomenclature in any African language of child-headed families. There is nothing like that, but it's the reality that you are pointing us to. And all that you do, we indeed step in and even provide support. Part of what teachers do is to even go to where these children government check whether there are parents or guardians? If there are no parents and guardians, then both officials and teachers assume the role of the parents to provide support to the learner. But we also work with social development to ensure that all the required services are provided to learners who find themselves in this environment. Infrastructure, Mangumani High School indeed raised this matter before. Mr. Van der Westhuizen has taken note of this. We work with the province and see how best we can assist. Yes, indeed, Honorable Majesty, we will definitely do our best to encourage parents to get learners to school. But as I said, they also have that choice. But I think they are also aware that according to the South African Schools Act, children of school going age are supposed to be in school. I've commented about smaller classes. Online, virtual learning, there's a lot of research done on this. One of those is that you don't get the same supervision that you get in the classroom. Schooling also is not only just for academic well-being, it's also about social and emotional well-being. And therefore, online learning cannot give you social and emotional well-being, which should be supporting your academic performance. That's one of the major weaknesses and flip sides of online or virtual learning. And of course, just in terms of the rendered mode of teaching, that's what we are looking at. We're looking at investing in ICT so that the best teacher is able to benefit the majority of learners who we need in the country. In terms of teaching, streaming lessons, virtual learning, it's one of the best methods that we have to go. But for the learning of learners themselves, it's got its flip side, it's got its disadvantages. And I agree with your observation of the best teacher being able to be shared by learners. Honorable Machabela, I agree with your observation. SMC is very important, balanced diet, learners who do not, some of the things that will contribute to this, poverty and hunger, and then leading to dropout rate. And I agree with you that we have to award contracts to do, but I've also indicated that the best thing is to transfer money to schools. And learners tend to benefit more if money is transferred to schools. Honorable Chair, concerns on dropout rate, we've noted them, but I must repeat, our attendance rate is still the best, even with the first world countries that are much richer than us. Our attendance rate is much higher than them, but also remember that their children might be having more access to online learning, and therefore the choice of virtual learning becomes easier to them than us. With us, there are very few learners who have access to online learning. That should be, I mean, the context of the high attendance rate in our country compared to theirs must also be within that context of access to ICT devices and even data and so on. School garden, this used to be part of the NSNC. It didn't work well, and then it was discontinued. I don't know whether there would be plans to bring it back, but at the moment it's no longer part of the GDW program and school gardens as part of MSNP. Who would account for school gardens? Is it the principal, the STB? Is both. The principal would also form part of the STB, but the day-to-day running of the school, as we know, is the responsibility of the principal. Already are we in case of another tick or a strike. The last presentation that I made when Honorable Matthias said, what is the value of the risk-adjusted differentiated approach? I said we are getting a for possible certain way. And indeed, if it happens, we'll readjust our plans. we have options that we have in reconstructing the academic year, we'll still be able to save lives and still save, reconstruct and save the academic year. Substitute teachers, the impact on the department and the sector. Indeed, the numbers required are far more than what we had planned for. Therefore, provinces are already reeling with the financial implications linked to this. And that's why our proposal to them has been teacher assistant, which could pay a little less than what you pay for your normal substitute post. But there's a question about what are the requirements for a substitute or a teacher assistant. I'm sure Mr. Parayaki will help me to respond to that one. What is happening to learners who don't have teachers, who are still waiting for a substitute teacher and so on? Well, with all learners back, the priority is that substitute teachers must be provided for grade 12 learners, and then Mr. Paraki will also explain in terms of the subject and the other grades that we prioritize in the position for. Thank you very much, sir. If you give a few minutes to Mr. Paraki to explain some of these things, and Dr. Whitley maybe to add to the National School Education Program. Thank you, Chair.
Dr. Whitley, you want to add something, Mr. Pareatu?
Okay, I'll go first. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good day to the Honorable Member. Just to indicate that before even COVID, our budget was already under pressure in terms of compensation of employees, because the wage bill in the public service had to be basically monitored, and in fact, there needed to be ways to reduce that. And we basically, in education, we pay over 217 billion in just the compensation as such. So the cost to replace every educator receiving a concession, which currently stands at 22,000, will be on over 2 billion over 3 months, 150 million per month. Now, that's not been factored into the budget because it didn't anticipate COVID-19, although provinces do keep a pool of substitutes. And that's true, as the Honorable Member, the DG has also indicated, that this deals with those cases of for maternity leave when teachers are normally ill as such and so forth for the replacement. In some places, some schools, there might be able to enroll folks as well with maybe an increase in enrollment or the introduction of new subjects arising in the curriculum. So that's basically what we've faced. Now, we were not under pressure prior to the return of all the grades, in that we just had grade 12 and 7, and in some instances there were other grades up to this period. So we were able to utilize other educators that the grades that didn't have learners. And one of the positives that come out is where grade 12 teachers were, we had comorbidities and were not available. There were grade 11 teachers that were taken. And some of the reports we get is that we have discovered some gems. Know that they've risen to the task and probably be given an opportunity in the future, to benefit the learners and the system in general. So now, yes, we are providing substitutes at full cost, because there are grades that in which we cannot look at any other alternative. In those we prioritize as grade 2. And there's grade 9 where learners who are going to move to grade 10 and choose the subject. And at grade 7 in the primary school, they are a group that exiting to go to the secondary school. Then there's a group at the foundation phase as well, where in that instance, we'll need an educator to remain with the learners for the entire day. So it's not like in the secondary or the primary school itself. So those instances, we need to consider the substitute. But then there's the issue of the differentiated timetable. It basically also diluted the full. I mean, they put the differentiated timetable where alternate days or alternate weeks learners come in. We find that we are allowed, we don't need to actually provide a replacement as such, because in instances where there's one or two, this rotation in a way is not felt with the absence of that educator. We did believe that about 3 months in June that the workload of the 35 hours may be impacted. So teachers teach up to about 25 to 26 hours. With the increase in terms of the current agreement, we could have them teaching up to 31 hours. So that has materialized as such. So we didn't need to go back to the ELRC and have a discussion with the trade unions in that respect. The other is that we have spoken about the education assistance, so referred to as the teacher assistant. Now, few provinces have considered implementing that, and one of them has already used 800 of those, but they are not a replacement for the teacher. They do not teach. They are sort of intermediate in that where educators, in terms of the concession, working from home, they would be the link with the learner, auditing and providing the material and so forth. So where you have instances where the educator doesn't cooperate, then you would find that education assistant would need to have support at the school level by other educators or the principal as such. So that's where the education assistant comes in. But the concept that we were talking about wasn't necessarily something that we were looking for in terms of COVID. Although COVID has given us an opportunity to introduce this, but with the caution that we should not casualize the profession. In that through the presidential employment stimulus package that's been proposed, the idea is to, where there's a complement of teachers in school, you would provide education assistance to assist teachers in the classroom. And that would be in a normal environment. And that's the intention to go. Now this would be more on a temporary basis, in the sense that we're looking at the issue related to unemployment and the fact that to address some poverty issues in communities as well in that respect. So the Honorable CEO asked about what is the qualifications and so forth. In the presidential program, it's to look at young people who have basically got a matric qualification. But what provinces are doing now is taking people who have had at least a post grade 12 qualification in that respect. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think that the Deputy Minister and the DG have really adequately covered most of the questions related to the school nutrition program. The only one that I want to add to is the one on the funding of the NSNP raised by Honourable King. Just to indicate, Chair, that we have been in consultations with the Treasury since the start of the lockdown. I think in preparation for the adjustment budget, the Treasury proposed a cut to the program. I think it was in the region of between 20% and 25%. And their argument was that we would have had savings in the program because the program would have been closed for a number of months. We've effectively managed, with the support of the DG, to convince the Treasury that the program shouldn't be cut. And so we have protected the NSNP. The $7.7 billion is still available to the sector. We are, of course, monitoring the program quite closely because of the different prices that schools and provinces are paying for PPEs, for example, and for sanitizers. And so we carefully, monitoring the impact of those purchases on the program. We do protect feeding from all the additional functions that come onto the program. So 96% of the 7.7 is ring-fenced for feeding. So, provinces can't move beyond that. And what we've allowed them to do in that additional 4% is to de-emphasize some of the programs that we normally do in an ordinary year, such as nutrition, education, and so on. And so that 4% then provides a little bit of a buffer for us going into the rest of the financial year. That's an amount of around 500 million for the entire country that we will utilize if we do find that some of the provinces do get into trouble. But just to indicate that for now, we don't anticipate that any of the provinces would struggle to provide food to learners for the duration of the school year. Thanks, Jim.
No, thank you very much, the MCG and the officials that gave responses. I think that covers the presentation of today. And let me take then this opportunity to thank you, GM. Sorry, GM.
I'm sorry, Jay. It's Honorable Sukers here.
Yes, Honorable Sukers.
Before Jay closes the meeting, may I just put out a request, Jay?
Yes.
The request is that the minister mentioned that, you know, statistics and detailed information cannot be provided because it's asked on the day. May we ask, please, that the questions that require detail and required statistics as asked by the members today, that the department will provide us with that information in a week's time in writing, because it is important. And then if the department has put the request that we beforehand give them those questions, can we use it as a standard, or can we then send them detailed questions before they come to the committee?
I think the responses that is for something to do with the with numbers, it's where bullet can be done in a week. The end, did you?
They are doable, but because now we're dealing with everything, we have only picked only two of such questions. So the ones that we have, we won. Because we still need to get information from provinces, especially those that affect provinces. So a week might be sufficient, but also where in the event some provinces did not give us the information, we will indicate and say further information will come.
Yes, you're right, Deputy Minister. What I have is therapeutic services provided to learners with special education needs per province. I'll check the other ones. I couldn't pick up many of such. But we'll definitely can provide that within a week. It shouldn't be a problem at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that one. So like I was saying that, and thank you very much. We are also rushing time, like how you told the honorable members. We are sharing this meeting with another committee that is supposed to start at 12. So thank you very much for your responses, DMCG and the team. It's our last meeting for this quarter. This one. We are going to be on recess and come back on the, I think the 5th or on the 7th of October, I'm not sure. But we are going to be on recess, and unfortunately we need to get a guidance from the House Chair as to how our program should be looking like, because we knew we had to stop and change the program based on the situation that we found ourselves in this year. But as soon as we are able to do that, we will forward the suggestions to the honourable members, and then we will see how do we move forward. Thank you very much. Then I think we can allow the department to leave us so that we are able to adopt the manners. And DG, we congratulations. I want to say congratulations. We are hearing in the corridors. We are hearing in the corridors of the new development of yourself at a personal level, both the minister and the DM, and yourself as well. You are not talking about them. But nonetheless, congratulations, DG. Even during lockdown, there are corridors. You must not think that there are no corridors. Goodbye to everybody from the department.
Chair, thank you so much. But we were coming to tell you. We are still going to come to tell you. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Yeah, and DG cannot do that ritual. It must be done by the minister or the deputy minister. It's so difficult to say, you see me, this one.
Hi, cool.
No, thank you so much.
when the elders speak, the young ones just keep quiet.
Yeah, it does not come.
No, it's fine. It's okay. Goodbye then.
Goodbye.
Members, we are adopting the minutes of the 25th of August. On page one, we had the meeting on the 25th of August at 9. This was through the Microsoft Teams. We dealt with the amended school calendar. We dealt with the risk adjusted differentiated approach and the risk-adjusted differentiated approach on curriculum and assessment and directions. And then you've got members who attended of the committee, and then you've got the officials that attended, and then you've got the parliamentary staff that attended. And then we opened the meeting, and we welcomed the meeting which was attended by the was led by DM, and then we called for a moment of silence on the passing of member Muhammad, and then the agenda was moved by Honorable Murafesa, seconded by Zuela, and then we had an address by the Deputy Minister Mohaule, and then we had a presentation on the amended school calendar, which was done by Ms. Gaya. And then Samabuya has presented the risk-adjusted approach to curriculum and assessment planning. And then we had Advocate Minister, who dealt with the direction published by the Department of Basic Education. And then we had the DG that dealt with the basic education sector has got a set differentiated approach. And then you had the committee observations by the members of the portfolio committee, which go right up. And then we had responses which were led by the deputy minister and the DG and the officials that also participated in responding, and then you considered the minutes of the 18th of August, and then the meeting adjourned at 16 past 12. Any
any corrections? No corrections. Can we then adopt the minutes as a full reflection? Okay. Yes, you can proceed.
Okay, thank you very much. I would like to propose the adoption of the minutes as the true reflection of our meeting. Honorable Shabalala, I'm sorry, Chair, I have no voice. I'm sick. I'm not well at all.
Oh, sorry to hear that. All right. Honorable Shabalala is moving. Any seconder?
I second, Chair. Adjourn.
Honorable Adwani is seconding. Thank you very much, honorable members. Llewellyn, how are we doing with the? Are we also adopting the fourth quarterly report?
Yes, Chairperson. If you just give me a minute, I will get it onto the screen.
Okay.
Honorable Chair, while Llewellyn is looking for it, may I address the Chair?
Yes.
Chair, I just want to ask, I heard the department now say that they haven't heard or they didn't hear many requests for details, really backtracking on what the minister said initially. Can we please ask that that the secretary of the committee liaise with members on those detailed questions that members have asked in this meeting to be forwarded again to the department so that they be able to give answers on that?
Yes, I don't think that is a problem. If there are members who had questions that need statistics and they feel they need those statistics answers, then they can liaise with the level. I don't think that's a problem. After the meeting. And then, honorable members, we've got the draft report of our committee on the fourth quarterly report. Which is the fourth quarterly report 2019-2020. And it was dated on the 1st of September 2020. On the introduction, we are saying that we have considered the fourth quarterly report of DBE on the 18th of August, and we dealt with performance indicators and targets, and then we looked into 5 programs which are outlined then of the department in quarter 4, and then we also looked into the achievements of the fourth quarter, and then we went to performance the program against performance indicators, and then we dealt with program 1, and then those are the quarterly targets and the annual targets. And then we dealt with program 2, which is administration. And then we dealt with the quarterly time and the biannual targets and the annual targets. And then we went to program 3, which is teachers, education, human resources, and institutional development. And then we dealt with annual targets, quarterly targets, and then we dealt with the program 4, which is training, information, and assessment, which is annual targets, and quarterly targets, and your biannual targets, and then we then dealt with program 5 as well, where we dealt with the quarterly targets as well and annual targets,
And then also we went to the allocation against the actual expenditure of the program. And then we were briefed on the deviations and the program, which mostly was on program 2 and program 4. And then we got the allocation against the expenditure for economic classification. And then we had the deviation for economic classification. And then we dealt with the deviations which were compensation on employees, the goods and services, the interest on rent and land, and the payments for capital assets and allocation. And then we dealt with allocation against the actual expenditure for the year, sorry, which is 2019-2020. And then we dealt with deviation for economic classifications. And then we dealt with details of earmarks, allocation, conditional grants for 2019-2020. And then we dealt with deviations as well. And then we had the committee observations, which is what members raised. And then we had responses, which were led by Minister Mupefa and the Deputy Minister and the DG, and then we had those recommendations which are on 8.1. Those are our recommendations about 5 bullet points, and then that's the report then that needs to be considered. Any corrections? No corrections? Can we then adopt the fourth quarter report and the true reflection? Honorable members,
Chairperson,
Honorable Adonis,
I do move to adopt the question.
Any seconda? Any seconda, members?
Honorable Chair.
Yes.
I would like to second the adoption of the report, Chair.
Is that the Honorable Tshabalala?
Yes, ma'am.
Yo, your voice is really not your voice, ma.
Yeah, I'm in a debate.
All right.
Thank you.
No, thank you very much. Then we have then adopted the fourth quarterly report, which then brings us to the end of our meeting. I think we've done well. We are 12 minutes earlier than scheduled.
Thank you, Chair.
The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, Honorable Member.
Thank you.
So it automatically saved.